I really do, you know, I want to get at least the primary concepts in here that we're, you know, that we have some issues with. And I really appreciate everyone who, you know, has looked at and suggested changes to this letter. One thing that Hillary is suggesting right off the bat that I think will help its digestibility is to include just at the very beginning sort of a paragraph that is more an executive summary of the concepts that are contained in here. And that would seem like, you know, if there are PSC members who don't want to read the whole thing, that would definitely help them to have a little bit of an executive summary. And I'm certainly willing to add that in. You know, I think the basic things are we really need some more time and work sessions with them to explore some ideas, that there be some future BPS projects for survey work and assessing, you know, conservation districts and, you know, resurveying if necessary, stuff like that. And then that the Historic Landmarks Commission be involved in identification, designation, and demolition of any existing or potential historic conservation districts. So sort of primarily those, maybe one or two other major, you know, ideas, but including that right up front. There's also right at the very, very beginning of the letter, I'd like to get people's take on the second sentence. And currently it says, like the Planning and Sustainability Commission, we are a quasi-judicial decision-making body with members appointed by the mayor. And I think what I'm trying to get at is that, you know, really, as bodies, we are equal because, you know, anytime there is legislative work, you know, they're not the decision-making body either, nor are we. And that work has to go to city council. And so maybe what that sentence should say is something like the Planning and Sustainability Commission, we are a recommending body to city council for legislative work with members appointed by the mayor. Because they really don't do quasi-judicial decision-making like we do. So just to get that factually right.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna suggest on the broad introductory aspect of it.
Yeah.
In watching that their Brandon's presentation to Planning and Sustainability, you know, following his presentation was a whole thing on climate change, and it really gives you an idea of how big of how high a level of different aspects of, you know, running the city that they're dealing with, and maybe reminding them that, you know, that the expertise of historic preservation is really well kept in the Landmarks Commission, but also that I don't think any of us are at odds. So I think there's this false setup that somehow historic preservation, if it happens, then the comp plan or other ideas of the comp plan won't happen. And when I listened to them talk about it, it really made me wonder, like, we have to almost resell historic preservation. We almost have to, like, convince people who are asking, well, why are we even preserving? And so if there's anything in an introductory paragraph that would sort of
mm-hmm.
acknowledge how much they have on their plate and you know, and just how much they're having to deal with in all aspects of how the city's going to grow in so many different metrics, that historic preservation isn't at odds with what they're trying to accomplish, that we are actually you know, we're not opposing forces, and so they're not exclusive of one another. Because I really felt like watching, you know, some of the questions. I when people are questioning, well, why are we even doing historic preservation? And I started going back to the comp plan, chapter 4, and then the summary about this, what's the intent of this chapter? And it's a discussion of context, you know, and that's sort of what I feel like historic preservation has been missing, is they're doing all this with no idea what the context is, because we haven't updated the inventory since 1984. It's our only ever, you know. So anyway, I know that the letter's really in the weeds, but I think I do agree, maybe an introductory letter that is a, you know, not a mean-spirited, because we want to be positive about how we're approaching this and acknowledging how hard their job is. But I think we have people who don't even know our message at all, it seems like, or understand why do you even preserve historic places or buildings. It's not everyone, I don't know, but I just felt like some of the questions were, how can we get rid of design review? Well, how can we make design review work better to meet the comp plan? You know, like reframe that question, because I was very discouraged. So yeah. Anyway, and I appreciate Brandon having to, Mr. Spencer Hartle, I should say, having to navigate the waters, you know. So we should watch how we, I think, strategically go forward. So anyway, sorry, I don't want to dominate the conversation, but I do think we have to resell historic preservation altogether.
Maybe sure, rebrand just a little bit. Sorry, this is Commissioner Foti. This idea again of the pearl clutching, you know, little Biddy in her historic mansion, you know, trying to keep the riffraff out. I think that there's like a definitely that still remains, and it's so much more, and just sort of updating people.
Chair Minor, if I may, Brandon Spencer Hartle, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability again. To Commissioner Roman's point, one of the Planning and Sustainability Commissioners did ask staff a question last week that was included in a long list of Planning and Sustainability Commission member questions, for which me and my team responded in a memo that I can share with you, Commissioner Minor, to share with the HLC if you haven't seen it. One of the questions is, what recommendations has the PSC made in the last 5 years related to historic preservation? And it wasn't an exhaustive list, but we did try to put together the list of items that PSC has weighed in on in their legislative recommending, in their legislative recommendations role. And it, I think, is illustrative to the places where this current commission has touched on preservation, such as Central City 2035, Better Housing by Design, and the earlier mixed use zones project. But I'll share that with you, Commissioner Minor, for forwarding out to the group if appropriate.
Thank you. I also let the record show that Commissioner Fuenmayor has joined us. So, welcome.
So do you want to add a sentence acknowledging the multitude of concepts that the AA consider?
That the PSC considers? Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Kind of an acknowledgement, especially, you know, I definitely made the point that, you know, we're sort of in the middle of a pandemic and all of that. But I think just adding to that and, you know, making sure that they know that, you know, we support their work in general.
Does anybody want to offer a specific sentence to add? Because at the end of this hearing, we want to have a final letter that you guys can vote on. So each word kind of matters.
I know.
I guess I brought this up some, and maybe I shouldn't have, but I guess the point I was trying to make is that, you know, they're dealing with this broad sort of regulatory regime, and we're dealing with it on a case-by-case basis. And so you know, I don't fault them for not completely understanding historic preservation when I don't understand all the climate stuff that was on their next mm-hmm. agenda item that I watched half of before I realized I'd gotten into it too far. So I don't know. I guess I need to think about, I don't know, maybe it doesn't need to be changed. Maybe I'm just, as we go to testify, I don't know. I want to make friends somehow with them, and I guess in a way acknowledge that they have a really hard job to do, and that we're not fighting against them achieving their goals in historic preservation, that we actually better meet the goals, I think, in some cases. So, but it's just hard because they've got so much, you know, stuff, it seems like, on their agenda. There are so many broad subject matters, and we just deal with historic preservation, albeit complicated, but it's a wheelhouse. It's a, you know, it's a smaller wheelhouse, and you know, I don't know. It's just an acknowledgement of humility that, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know everything about what it takes to meet the comp plan goals. I can only show them how, you know, we'll be better off if historic preservation is allowed to, you know, do that. So anyway, did you guys watch the video? I don't know if you guys watched it or not, but even if you just watched the section that Kara pointed out, minute 53 to 101 or whatever it was, there were some poignant questions about really diluting. How do we make sure there are no additional regulatory encumbrances on development, and design review is a big one, and false statements about, you know, color or whatever being regulated, or, you know, people get mixed into ADUs, and, you know, if it's in Irvington, are they just getting the district guideline regulatory regime, or is it also ADUs next to your neighbors? People want to have good relationships, and so I don't know, planners must have made people opaque windows in at some point. Those are the types of, I think, over regulation that they felt hindered. So anyway, I'm going on and on, but I'm concerned that we have to almost resell historic preservation as a concept, even though it's in the comp plan.
Can I suggest? Sorry, Commissioner Foti. No, I was going to say, well, in terms of a sentence, I mean, I agree with that. I think we could say, you know, we appreciate all the work that PSC does and the breadth of their job, and we are here to help each other. We want to work with them to help them make this, you know, I think we just reiterate that we are the experts and we want to weigh in. We want to help them with this because their job is so well, to me it seems onerous, but extensive.
And we may be able to state that many of our goals are aligned. Many of our goals are aligned and it's not two separate. So maybe it's that, an appreciation and then a reminder that our goals are aligned, and here are some things that could be done in this Cone Amendment that would additionally create alignment and kind of reinforce some of these points. Seems like short but sweet.
Yeah.
But important.
I think it could be important for us to understand that City Council puts a lot of pressure on them, and that that there's a potential for us to help each other.
So I have the draft letter up, and I just added a sentence before the last sentence of that first paragraph.
Right.
Or actually right before, there are some long sought and much needed positive changes in the proposal, but we also have concerns. I added, we appreciate the work of the PSC and the breadth of your charge and would like to offer our assistance. Anything else?
I mean, I think I liked Annie's wording that, you know, just basically our goals are aligned, you know, if we could maybe get that in there too.
But like to offer our assistance in reaching common goals.
Yeah.
I like that.
Okay.
That's great. Okay. Moving along. So under, you know, comp plan and the proposal, the volume one paragraphs, I had left the all of the comp plan references highlighted. And, you know, nobody's going to go back and read those, but I still think it's important to have them in here. I guess, I don't know.
No, I agree. I did go back and read them all. And there,
you did?
There are legal basis for holding them to account, I think. So I think citing as many of the plan goals and policies and, you know, I think it's well worth it. Their own summary, and I brought this up, chapter four, what is this chapter about? The goals and policies in this chapter convey the city's intent to, and then the first one, encourage building and site design and promote human and environmental health, public safety, and respond to local context. So if you don't know what is local context, and we know what it is for rivers and streams, but we don't know what it is for historic properties. So we have to develop the HRI. And one of the planning commissioners talked about how, well, shouldn't we have done this 30 years ago? Isn't it too late? And I thought, oh my God, you know, we've been screaming. I've been hearing about it since I've lived here for 30 years now. So that was a little disheartening too. But I would leave the comp plan references in myself just because I think it takes them back to, you know, what we all agreed on was right. Important as a community. So.
Yeah.
I'm gonna start getting.
Okay. So under paragraph two, I start referring to, you know, the fact that all of these processes, you know, that they're proposing are legislative. And, you know, that, to be honest, that makes them unattainable. You know, it doesn't help us reach out to the community, you know, to folks who haven't had any expertise or any, you know, real understanding of how preservation could benefit them. It doesn't help us meet our comp plan under those goals. And I guess I wanted to talk this through a little bit with commissioners. And, you know, I sort of get into it a little bit more also in the letter under the theme discussions. So, you know, just talking about, I guess the new processes, where is that? Three, no, designation, right. I guess, I mean, it's sort of shows up all through here, but really, I think the equity point that I wanted to make is really tied up in the fact that the comp plan says, you know, we should be pushing for more resources that aren't necessarily tied to architecture or, you know, white ownership or all of that? And how is this proposal helping that at all? Except through individual properties. Hillary, did you have any suggestions around the language, the general language, or did you even get the point that I was trying to make?
This is under
page 2, number 2. Okay. And it's really, you know, it's just creating access and a process, but really making access unattainable. Yeah. Designating new locally designated districts is not helpful.
Yeah, my only comments were really about punctuation, removing the dashes, because with the dashes there, it made it look like you were saying the opposite of what you were trying to say.
Oh, okay. I thought you were thinking that that was really just...
No.
Yeah, I found it kind of confusing, that sentence, myself.
Okay.
So that's a good...
Great. Okay. Does anybody have any other comments about, you know, the thinking there, or how to put it better, or the concept itself?
So, I guess the one part that I was confused by, a 2B.
So we're flipping.
Oh, sorry, okay. Am I gone too far?
No, not at all. We're gonna have to go back in a little bit, so it's no problem. So page 4, yeah.
Sorry, there's just a line here. Having to do with PHLC agrees with added language, stating that a property owner who objects to designation must have retained ownership since the time of designation. It appears that this change could go a long way to reducing the incidence of demolitions enabled by designation removal by opportunistic developers. I guess the question is what happens in, I guess I was just confused, and I guess whatever, when that, you know, in 50 years when the property changes ownership. So basically, if this is in 50 years and you say, you know, must have retained ownership since the time of designation, well, that wouldn't make any sense. I guess, am I misreading it? It was just in the letter, not.
I think that's mostly, and Brandon can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's added as a clarification because that's only. That the approval criteria require that they only meet one, and that's one. So, if they didn't meet that, then they would have to, you know, somebody could request that. They would just have to meet one of the other approval
criteria. Got it. Okay. All right. Perfect. I just read that one line, and then I was like, that doesn't make any sense. That's the sole criteria. But okay.
Okay.
So it's written fine.
Okay. Let's see. How about I'm looking for Hillary's question mark here to me. Okay. So on page 4, near the top. I started sort of throwing in some information about, you know, what I was calling a good neighborhood agreement or a density agreement. And I think I don't necessarily want to go too far down this path. I think it's something that we would like to have a neighborhood, you know, sort of involvement at some level to what is happening in their neighborhood, you know, perhaps annually. And I do think that the PSC needs to feel like, you know, they should get back to metrics, that they should get back to actually looking at what's happening in that neighborhood and assessing the result of their policy decisions. So, you know, we could say something more about how, you know, the neighborhood BPS and, you know, perhaps PSC could have sort of an annual review of, you know, each single family historic neighborhood to assess, you know, how is this working? How is density, you know, being improved? Are there things that neighborhood is actually doing that are working versus, you know, neighborhoods that aren't historic? In other words, I just really want to get to the fact that historic preservation can be a tool and a positive tool rather than something that, you know, the PSC feels like they have to not let anyone have it or use it because you know, they're too scared. So I'd like to say something about a suggestion that, you know, there be sort of an annual review and that, you know, each historic neighborhood really could use different strategies to achieve more density, and that a historic designation really is a way to achieve more greater good than any non-historic neighborhood. I know I'm not saying that very clearly, but
the argument I heard the Planning and Sustainability Commission make against it, or, you know, against the idea of historic districts hindering density, was more of the regulatory regime that people felt like that they were up against, because I don't know that there's any density difference. It's more just the process that you have to go through to design something in a historic district, but it's in our control. And so I don't know, maybe there's more incentive wrapped up in that. It's hard to see how you can force someone to put in an ADU if they don't want to do it. And how do you punish someone for, I don't know quite how you can put forcing neighborhoods to add density. It seems like a very difficult thing to do. And I don't know, maybe it's possible, but finding ways to just make it not as difficult, or, you know, any more difficult to develop in a historic district than anywhere else. And in part, that's, I guess, some of what the code project's trying to do. So anyway. That was one of the issues in here. I wasn't sure how we would ever come to some, you know, some mechanism to enact it. But at the same time, a lot of historic districts had more people living in them when they were first built, and some of the, you know, houses that were built for larger families with servants. And so anyway, I'm just relaying what I felt like, yeah, I was hearing from the Planning and Sustainability Commission, that why wouldn't they like historic districts? Well, it was the sort of difficulty that people were describing. But it's the same thing that other people liked about the, you know, protecting of the resource. And the metrics that we talked about, and I was, you know, thinking about, you know, does everything have to be a metric? You know, do we say, you know, the Pittock Mansion was saved, it was a 43-acre site, it's a park now and a house museum. It could have been housing, and so how, what is the metric, that the housing would have been better, or was it better that we saved a house museum that attracts hundreds of thousands of visitors a year to the region, is recognized as one of the premier house museums in the Pacific Northwest. You know, I have a trouble when we're just going to weigh everything in pure metrics like that, because it almost says, well, we're not going to think about historic preservation in the equation. It's not a metric that is factored in. Either the metric for housing is met or not, and it's either historic preservation is in the way or it's not. I don't know, but
I think what I'm trying to get at is the idea that, you know, if density is the only negative thing, you know, that the PSC sees as, you know, there's numerous other positive ways that historic preservation is meeting the comp plan. But if they, you know, if they need a way to, you know, specifically address that, I actually think that, you know, having a historic preservation or a historic designation on a neighborhood could be a tool to help them reach density goals. You know, I don't know quite how it looks.
They have built a lever in there, because they could take a Ladd's Addition district and move it from a higher level of protection to a lower level protection using that, you know, using that as a, I mean, I think that's wrong. And that would be doing it to everybody on a collective neighborhood level versus saying to one homeowner, you didn't build an ADU. And I don't even know how you'd figure out, does everybody have to double their number of units per acre per se or whatever it is. I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate, Kristen, because I don't disagree.
Yeah.
With the concept that historic districts could provide a lot more density than they are right now, as much as any other single family residential neighborhood, which, you know, they used to allow more apartment, smaller scale apartment buildings mixed right. into single family, and those often fit in very well. And,
yeah.
You know, there's lots of spots where non-contributing properties could be developed into more dense, you know, and a lot of neighbors probably wouldn't like it. Some purists won't like that, but I believe that we could do that in historic districts. And the only thing that makes it become a problem is if we don't have any design review, and if everybody just does whatever they want, and then the district becomes so diluted over time that, like conservation districts today, we forget what we're even conserving. It's like, we don't even remember in some cases.
I kind of agree with Matthew that, in listening to the PSC's comments after Brandon's briefing, the comments I heard were anecdotal stories about the historic review process. I don't remember too many comments about density. I think that has been a narrative that's been in the city and probably over the country for the past several years, but I feel like they've built in a lot of ways around that with RIP and BHBD. I feel like this bolded sentence, we have many ideas around the rights and responsibilities, that could lead into another statement about wanting to work together to identify the value of preservation and how it can be used as a tool to mm-hmm. achieving the comp plan goals, rather than putting this sentence in, I don't know, or this last chunk.
Yeah.
Because we haven't heard from everybody else, but I don't know how others feel about that chunk in there. It also feels a little bit detached from the first part of the paragraph.
Yeah. I just, you know, I know BDS was saying, well, you know, specifically, how could we do that? And so I just sort of felt like, oh, you know, I should throw out something that is one idea, but okay, let's take that out.
I
So everything after public good, let's just take that out. And then do we need to add in anything specifically there? Maybe not, just leave it.
One thought, Chair Minor, Brandon again. Well, maybe it's two thoughts. One is this commission and the PSC, I believe, had a successful and unexpected opportunity to change the allowed zoning in the Kings Hill and Alphabet Historic Districts through the Better Housing by Design project. And there may be a model in that collaboration for districts that haven't received that level of evaluation. And for those of you who weren't on the commission or don't remember, Planning and Sustainability Commission recommended the council, and council adopted an up-down zoning approach in Alphabet District to treat that district more as a singular whole, where in some areas of the district, the height and FAR allowances came down, in other areas they came up, to come up with something that more matched historically what the largest buildings historically were scaled at. And as part of that, PSC did recommend lowering the allowed maximum FAR in the multi-dwelling zones in all historic districts at the RM4 level. And I thought that was a pretty interesting and unexpected opportunity. And PSC really carved out time and slowed the Better Housing by Design project to figure that wrinkle out. And similar discussions have not happened in recent years outside of the central city and those Alphabet and Kings Hill historic districts. So there may be a model. And towards that end, PSC doesn't regularly watch your quasi-judicial views. And I'm always reminded of the Buck Prager story, where a demolition review stopped the proposed demolition of a historic contributing building. And in the ashes of that demolition denial came a proposal that this commission supported and council upheld to build compatible infill that provides affordable housing. And as you testify to PSC, it may be worth reminding them of some of your award, your projects of the year, like Buck Prager or the living building that's now under construction in Old Town, or the development of housing in Old Town within the height limit. So there, I think there's, you know, the PSC commissioners don't regularly follow your quasi-judicial work, and you all know some really great projects that have happened. It may be not just in spite of, but in some cases because of the status of the historic district through the use of tax credits or through leveraging the height limits for part of the city where a living building is feasible. So just one thing I'd run through out there.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate the reminder on, you know, the work that was done in Alphabet and Kings Hill through both of those code projects, RIP and BHBD. Okay. I'm not sure it has to go into the letter. I mean, it could be something, you know, that's part of our testimony. Okay. Anybody have any more comments about this before we move on? Okay. Conservation districts. This is definitely another one that, you know, we've really struggled with. We really need the code to address better. And yet I think what the proposal lands on is it's not very exciting, I think, for me, and it's not very attainable for areas of town that, you know, haven't really considered themselves historic in the past. And I really want this part of the code to reflect, yes, you know, we have these different levels now in the code of, you know, different, you know, a hierarchy, if you will, but that the bottom levels especially are, you know, they have much more of a voice for people who really want to get surveyed, to maybe move up the ladder. And that isn't in here. And I also think we can potentially even move away at some level in the, you know, in this hierarchy from having all of our conservation district, you know, so maybe there's another level of conservation district is what I'm saying, that is a little bit less concerned with compatibility. And maybe that is more of a cultural district, or maybe it's sort of an innovation or eco district. But I really think it's worth exploring, because otherwise we won't get this opportunity again.
I just would like to add something to that, that, you know, if they're not really careful about what we're trying to conserve in conservation districts, the prescriptive path option, which is the non-review, just as long as you follow this prescriptive path, it leads to a really bland and watered down. And so I think someone brought up the Kenton district, maybe it was Brandon, that it describes you must use cast ornament on your facades. To me, that's a really easy thing to understand. Whereas some of the districts don't have clear kind of objectives about what we're promoting. And when you offer that prescriptive path, everybody takes that because it's just perceived as easier. So, and we've all seen kind of the context photos that show a project that rises to our level. And you wonder, how did all that meet the prescriptive path and the conservation district's objectives? And so to go forward with the code and not actually really put the effort into looking at the districts, the conservation districts, which in this hierarchy get elevated above National Register districts, at least new ones, it's just a little bit worrisome that we're setting them up for failure, basically. And anyway,
yeah.
I agree that there's, I don't know, cultural, there was some talk at the PSC about cultural districts and this equity issue too. And so I think, you know, understanding that a conservation district isn't just conserving A, it can conserve B too. It's an approach that can be applied to a specific objective that you're trying to conserve. And they talked about ethnic businesses or legacy businesses. So I think it's a matter of our language and, you know, making sure that everyone understands that a conservation district could serve this role, a healing role of, you know, I don't know. Again, I'm a middle-aged white guy, so I'll shut up.
No, not at all. I mean, I think it's really important to suggest future work, but to also be clear about, you know, how far down the road this code project could go. So that is a concept in this letter, is that, you know, we really need to be strong about suggesting that we look at all of the conservation districts again and actually do that work. But this code project isn't going to necessarily get us to a degree of being able to look at each one again. I think I'm more talking about like new conservation districts.
But, and doesn't it put that into the Planning and Sustainability Commission's camp in terms of, you know, they'd be the body that would initiate that type of a district? Or, I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding, but they don't have a lot of bandwidth, so that we're going to rely on a commission that maybe doesn't have a lot of bandwidth or interest in the silo that we're in to somehow do this. I would argue that it should stay with us and that maybe we should try to motivate to help define what these districts are. And that would be very useful, I think, for everyone.
I think to getting to that point, if you bolded that last paragraph before proposal 1C, like you've already made that point. So
yeah. I
think drawing attention to it.
Okay.
Could be enough.
Do you see that, Matthew, in the letter?
I think I've lost track of where we're at, so my apologies.
Okay.
Or it's the last paragraph before proposal 1C, right above theme 2.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, back to your other point about the hierarchy, I do believe it's misguided to look at the hierarchy solely from a protection level. I think it has to work, you know, also for level of anticipated or, you know, or desired change. So I very much would like to see National Register pulled into this hierarchy.
Thank you for clarifying that for me.
Okay. So are there text changes?
I know.
We can work out the details of the specific text as long as people agree to the general statement.
I think the broad tension for me that I see is this idea that, you know, a local neighborhood, even if 100% of them want to have a historic district, if it's at odds with a broader community goals, you know, that we all need to deal with and grappling with the future, you know, what's the balance? You know, it seems like it's weighted more towards the overall community and less towards the individual neighborhood, you know, grassroots sort of bubbling up. And anyway, I don't have any changes to suggest with that specifically, but I don't know. It's a concern that I have. We'll not see much more in the way of conservation or historic districts. And because we haven't been able to get funding for this, sorry if I'm going back a little bit, but the request for the funding for the HRI, is so piecemeal and, you know, and yet 30 years have gone by. And so, you know, where's the commitment to the whole context for the entire city that's equitably applied to all the neighborhoods through the lens of what's happened already? I don't see it happening from them just because I don't feel like that's not their thing. So I agree with the idea that we need to promote, incorporate existing surveys. I mean, get all this information into one spot. And I think one of the Planning and Sustainability Commission members asked, if you're listed as a significant resource, does that come with any regulatory? And Brandon, if you can clarify, I don't think it does, right? We're just identifying. We're not suggesting there's any regulatory regime on significant resources other than a, Is there a demo review?
Yeah, so good question, Commissioner Roman. The way these code amendments are structured is that significant resources would be subject to the 120-day demolition delay. My professional opinion is that that's what's required by state law whenever a local government determines something to be eligible for designation, that it enters into the, you know, sort of holding pattern before a designation is considered. And so therefore 120-day demolition delay is the appropriate regulation to apply. That said, under the proposal 1A framework, all those past surveys and studies could come onto the inventory as information from that could be culled new significant resources. It would come through the Landmarks Commission and go to council to determine should they get that elevated status. And then those, some of those could be considered for landmark designation if the owner is consented. So the idea would be under the new hierarchy, the new sort of HRI being a bigger bucket, we could just start to drop stuff into that bucket for informational purposes onto the map, and then pulling from that those things that are significant through a process whereby this commission would make a recommendation to council to do that in batches. So you might have something like the Montevilla survey that was conducted last year. All that could come onto the inventory, no regulatory effect. The 8 properties that were determined significant could be recommended to council to be significant resources. Maybe one or two of those owners consent to a landmark designation. You sort of have the full spectrum of what's out there.
Well, I appreciate it. It gets us to a living document.
Yeah.
So, and it's the district part of it that's the troublesome part of it for me. Again, repeating myself.
All right, one thing I'll just jump in since I keep stealing the mic. It's hard to help myself. I went back and listened to the Planning and Sustainability Commission's discussion on the mixed-use zones project 4 years ago. And they were discussing the idea of reducing height in our low-rise commercial storefront areas. So places like Mid-Alberta, Mid-Division, Westmoreland, Selwood, Multnomah Village, St. John's, Park Roads, Rose City Park. These places where there's a density of older commercial buildings, and ultimately they generally rejected the staff proposal to lower heights in those areas, preferring for a more holistic preservation solution, with the argument being that lowering heights alone won't preserve buildings. And the example at 33rd and Belmont of a 2-story building being demolished for a 3-story building was evidence that just capping heights alone isn't a way to save buildings. At that time, state admin rule said that 100% owner consent was required to create a local district. Conservation districts would only bring demo delay. And so the menu of options available to the PSC at that time for a local designation, they had no option for a local designation. Now state law says it's 50% plus one. And so it gives a new, it had that discussion happen within a context of whatever new local designation framework we have, it may have resulted in a different outcome. Maybe not for all those areas, maybe not, you know, historic, maybe be conservation, I don't know, but the tools, as they had the discussion, they were just met with they had no tool. The National Register was the only tool on the table, and that's something out of the PSC's control.
Well, right. I mean, we didn't have any tools either because we didn't have a way to do that.
Yeah. But it's just interesting to go back and listen to that discussion. And it is informed the direction on conservation districts that is proposed of if there was a meaningful demolition regulation and the ability to dovetail with the design overlay zone in some of those areas, that may be an answer, an option for some of those low-rise commercial storefront zones in a future where that, you know, is a majority property owner decision.
Yeah. Okay. Could be a good thing to discuss in front of the commission. Okay. Let's see if we can continue moving on here.
Before you do, I have a question that I should have asked at the beginning.
Okay.
We intend to have Landmarks Commissioner speak at the top of testimony tomorrow in positions 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
We want to know who those 3 commissioners are, and we can talk about what you're going to say after we get through the letter. But and then if anybody else wants to testify, you can. But you have to register by 5 p.m. today. So I want to make sure that at the very least, 3 of you are registered. Who has registered?
I have.
Okay, great.
Awesome.
Which 3 of you want to do the ordered testimony 1, 2, 3. The fourth person would have to wait.
I'll volunteer to wait since I'm definitely not the one who dug into this. So I'll pass my 1, 2, 3 position to the three people that actually reviewed this carefully. I reviewed a little, but not as carefully as they did. So yes, I'm happy to, you know, I'll check in with you, Brandon, like how do I know and what I should say, but, and I have another meeting at 4, okay, that I have to get off for a little bit early, just a couple minutes early, just FYI.
Oh, and today? You're saying?
Yes, today.
Okay.
Sorry,
okay.
I thought it was going to go to 3:35. I should know how these go.
any commissioner who's testifying tomorrow will need to register by 5 tonight. Tomorrow morning, first thing, everybody will get an email that says what slot number they're in and when they can anticipate providing that testimony. And for commissioners Roman, Minor, and Fuhlmayer, if you could let me know the order, who will go first, second, and third, mm-hmm, I'll make sure that you're first, second, and third.
Okay. So
I don't know if I can. I can.
I will feed you. I will feed you as much as you want me to. Okay, Ernestina. Please. I know you don't love being, public speaking, but I think your voice is really important because, you know, you are definitely one of those people, I think, who, you know, you're struggling to stay on this commission even through all the work that you have. And so I want to get you in and out, you know, as quickly as possible, because I know you're so stretched.
Okay.
I will but be the third. If you're comfortable with, you know, just saying it, I will send you, you know, all of your...
Well, and we already kind of thought about the idea of talking about future projects, like survey work and such, I think.
Commissioner Minor, can I, I've written a page or so of what some remarks I just was jotting down. I'll send it to you, and I don't know. I figured as a oral presentation, it's as much my own opinion as it is the commission's. I'll be there representing the commission, but I can send you what I'm planning to say or some ideas of what I thought I'd say. And
let's work on that.
I wasn't getting too. Yeah, we can go offline if others are pressed for time. So
yeah, let's get through this letter before 4 o'clock.
Okay, perfect.
At the latest.
And Maya, I hope that you not speaking in the beginning doesn't mean that you have to wait until like 8 p.m. So that's my worry.
I mean, if we get a general understanding of the order, I'll just make sure I call in around that time. So, yeah. As long as I clearly know what I need to be, or ahead of time, you know what I mean? I'll keep up with the testimony. I'll check in.
Right.
To make sure I don't miss my slot. Yeah.
You should get a some idea of when your time will come up.
I just need to absolutely know before we sign off or at some point what I should be saying, because I'm assuming we're going to have a cohesive sort of, and I just need to add on anything else that you guys didn't get to.
Well, I think what we were just talking about was that it would be Commissioner Roman, Fuenmayor, and myself doing the coordinated, you know, front presentation.
Right.
And I thought you were volunteering to sort of go later.
No, totally. But it seems like, okay. Am I just going to not say that I'm on the Landmark Commission or just say?
Oh, no, you will. You will say that you are on the Landmarks Commission and, you know, representing us as well. But
yeah. I guess I just wanted to make sure if there's absolutely anything, maybe I could reiterate something just to make sure that it's, again, okay, part of what we want to get as opposed to just me, like, yeah.
Right. Just topical. Yeah.
Okay.
Maya, I'll reach out to you later, just about, because there are a number of things. I just want to make sure that we get through the letter.
Yeah.
And after we talk about what they're going to talk about, if you have to hop off.
Hillary, I have a 4 o'clock too, okay. So.
We'll get through this letter then.
Okay. let's see. had thrown in a little bit about the historic tax credits. I think, you know, Hillary's got a little question mark there, and I think maybe it's just it's just doesn't have enough to do with the code to include it. So if nobody feels strongly that, you know, this little bit needs to be in here, I think we can just probably delete it.
Where is that exactly? I'm sorry.
It is. So
it's above 1C.
Yeah, it's towards the end of, you know, right above 1C. So it says the federal incentive to designate at a national register level HTC program, blah, blah, blah. And I think it's, you know, it's really getting into the weeds a little bit.
Well, sorry, it's Commissioner Mahoney. I kind of feel it's a valid point to make, because I think maybe just a conversation I've had with a PSC commissioner that it's not clear what the impact will be, and that there is no design protection for city. And I think maybe it's just some clarification in the wording about the fact that there are no design protections, and that it could affect any future possibility for designation. Mm-hmm. It could have an impact we are not aware of at this time, so it's a red flag.
Okay. I like that. So just shorten it up to sort of focus in on the fact that, you know, because this code proposal removes design protections, you know, from National Register listed, we're worried about the impact onto historic tax credit and, you know, potentially other things that we can't even anticipate.
This code project doesn't do that, though. The state rules did that in 2017.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. No, this code project does that by not putting National Register properties into city designated slots.
We can't do that, though, without a hearing.
Right, but we can hold a hearing. Right? Well, I mean, we can do that.
Recommend to the PSC that they make it a district, but they need to understand the importance of recommending it to city council if it's not already a city district. Because that's going to be the reluctance that we are imagining, right?
I mean, I think right now what we're saying is that in this code proposal is that the PSC is sort of going to be the decider about which historic districts get protection and which ones don't.
Yes.
Right? And so if there's a process for any of them to get protections, then why wouldn't they all get some level of protections?
Yeah, maybe this is tied up more with the notes about the, you know, PSC being the ones to recommend to city council, because that's the only way they're going to get design protections.
Okay.
Have you, Chair Minor, it's not something we considered at staff level, but considered something that requires there to be a public hearing within a certain length of time of a resource listed in the National Register? Like up, down, left, right, you know, something that triggers a hearing process?
No.
We didn't either on the staff level. I don't know how that would work exactly, but just hearing the comment, the discussion I just heard, you know, I would proffer that as where my mind went of what if there was a requirement that a hearing be scheduled within 6 months, a year, 3 months, whatever that number is, to determine the appropriate level of protection, if not National Register.
Mm-hmm.
And that would save individuals who list their property as a landmark on the National Register from having to go through a type one review to achieve historic or conservation landmark status, if that's what that owner is so wanting to do.
Right.
But just a thought. I haven't analyzed how that would work, but.
Yeah, I like that.
I like it too. And I would agree that, that the code changes don't meet goal 4B, because we're not identifying, protecting, rehabilitating parts of an urban environment that continue to evolve. I mean, it's we're not protecting by not having anything other than a demolition delay. I mean, I don't see how we're meeting our responsibilities.
As a CLG?
Just under goal 4B of the comp plan. It's basically, we're not protected. We're not identifying historic and cultural resources are identified, protected, and rehabilitated as integral parts of an urban environment that continues to evolve. So by not having anything, I just feel like we're not holding up that goal. We're not meeting that.
As staff, Commissioner Roman, there's the policies around demolition also. And those policies and the goal that you just read weighed on our thinking about adding demolition review in conservation districts, that without the public process and the ability to deny a demolition permit in a conservation district, I was having a hard time seeing how the continuation of the conservation districts would result in preservation and meet the comp plan goals around demolition.
I guess, yeah, you're way more in the weeds than I am, Brandon. You know the law a lot better than I do. I look at that goal and I go, well, are we meeting that goal by allowing all National Register properties to just, you know, they're really treated as, it's a very low designation in our hierarchy, even though they might be, I don't know. I don't want to get mixed up between districts and individual listed buildings, because there we have the owner and a process for them to get where they want to go. So it's really more like the Peacock Lanes of the world. I don't know. Are we protecting places that, well, we're not even identifying, so it's hard to say whether we're protecting what we haven't identified, but I don't know. Goal 4B, I think people must have fought hard for that goal during the comp plan process.
Okay.
Yeah, people, including this commission, testified on that goal and the policies.
So I'm hearing that if we let's take out this discussion about historic tax credits, but I think there's sort of two concepts that really, maybe they're each just a sentence and they go under the proposal 1B, where we're talking about those hierarchies. And one of those sentences is really around what Commissioner Mahoney was saying about, you know, if we remove protections from these National Register listed, you know, all protections, we can't anticipate the results, right? That's maybe not exact wording yet, but something around that. And then the other one is what I think Brandon was just saying, which is, maybe we need to get specifically in here that we believe that there should be a hearing process, you know, a city hearing process within a certain time period after any National Register listing to determine protections.
Or prior, since you already see it.
Sorry, Hillary, you say that again?
Or prior, since you already see it on its way to National Register. I don't know if that would work.
Yeah, on its way. I love the idea. I think it's a great idea.
I think at this point we could just pose the idea, an idea.
Okay.
And have discussions, hopefully.
I mean, is there also maybe a fallback where they automatically become significant resources at least?
They'd be above that on the hierarchy in the current proposal, wouldn't they?
Commissioner Mahoney, that's part of the hope of having the HRI be all resources. you know, that you'd be staggered at your level on the HRI, so that if you come in on the National Register, you're on the inventory, protected at a level above an undesignated significant resource. But that was our thinking too when creating that bucket.
Yeah.
I mean, the letter says, for the most part, the appropriate level is the city historic district or landmark level, though some may be best represented at a conservation district level.
I agree with that, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I think the idea that Brandon had is to see that it happens, you know, to see that there's actually a mechanism to make it happen. So
that's, that trigger. I think that's a great reminder that needs to happen.
Then I would feel better about our meeting goal 4B, is that we're actually looking at all these resources and, you know, I don't know if we're making a determination, but we're making a recommendation at least.
Okay.
So I hear that there is a sentence coming, at least one sentence, to address this issue. Before Annie and Andrew have to step off, I wonder if there are any other questions that they want to raise, and if they support the letter as they've seen it.
I do. I'm the one that was signing off.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Smith. This is Commissioner Foti. Yeah, I'm good. Just please let me know what I should present. I could touch base with you tomorrow, Commissioner Minor, if that helps, but it sounds like you'll let me know, Hillary.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Bye, you guys. Signing off. Sorry.
I do support it as coming. I support it as well, and I got to get going as well.
Okay. Thanks. Okay.
Any other issues you want to talk about? Or comments?
I think the only other idea was under the theme three, protection, is under demo reviews, really sort of clarifying when the type four versus, you know, type three criteria get used. I think the BDS letter had a point about that, that we could kind of echo. And just making sure that if a project is going through such a major alteration that it would technically qualify as a demolition, that, you know, that there should be perhaps some demo criteria that get applied to that during that review. I mean, I'm definitely appreciating the fact that it would potentially be able to go through in one review rather than two, if it makes sense. But just to be careful about that clarification. Is there wording we could take from the BDS letter around that, Hillary?
Let's see.
As Hillary looks for that language, Chair Minor, I do have a request in to have the correct order for the three commissioners presenting in the beginning tomorrow, and I need to get that in. Am I correct to think it's you, Commissioner Roman, Commissioner Few, and Mayor, or is that order incorrect, or have you determined yet?
Commissioner Roman, what do you think?
I think it's Chair that you're our point woman there. Lady, so I mean, I'll be there through the whole thing. I would say first myself, but I don't know. That would be my order. But I'm happy to go first too if you want. You want to maybe read? I'll send you my letter to see if you want me to go first or not. so we have to coordinate something, right? I mean, we have to. we have to coordinate who's saying what about what. So my comments are just more larger, bigger picture comments about our civic responsibility to create a functioning, beautiful place that builds on all the previous work that our, you know, previous people have put into it. And I'm happy to answer questions that they would have, but I'm more interested in opening a dialogue about why historic preservation is so important and why it's necessary to balance our lives between work and play and everything else. So the public realm is the public realm, and that's a lot of what we're talking about. So I just tried to put a few words together. I wasn't sure what we were doing, and I don't want to just not do anything. So
I have meetings
in the morning, but I have some time. If you want to talk, we can try to coordinate.
Yeah, definitely. Or even, you know, this evening is okay with me too. But I want to make sure that your comments include, you know, maybe a little bit about either some future work. So this could either be you or Ernestina, I think, discussing sort of future projects, you know, that really we don't want to lose track of. And maybe that ties into what you're saying in sort of a big picture look at, you know, what we're doing here together.
Well, for me, it's all going back to the HRI and what we've been fighting on forever. A lot of it is anyways, and just in understanding what you have, you know, we can't, you know, a context study takes, you know, study and analysis. And if you don't do that, it's hard to then reference why we find context important in our lives.
Yeah. Okay, Brandon. So it'll be me and then Ernestina and then Commissioner Roman.
Okay. Well, is it because you don't like what you're hearing I'm saying, or?
Not at all. Not at all. I think I'm giving you the last word.
I'm someone who appreciates candor. And so I'd rather have, I think we like critiques in our business. It's how we get to the next phase of the project.
I think Kristen's telling you that she wants you to anchor this relay.
Oh, no.
Exactly.
Here's well, the let baton. Me send you what I've written so far, and we'll see what you think. So, anyway.
Okay.
I think I really appreciate all the work you put into the letter, Commissioner Minor. And you know, this doesn't. There were lots and lots of drafts, and with Hillary Adams' help as well. So you did the lion's share of the work here, and it was just, you know, it laid out a, you know, a nice day of reading and then going back and looking and, you know, so it really prompted, you know, a lot of me rethinking how, you know, where were we with the comp plan when we developed that, and that still is what we're working from here. And so there's a lot in there that was, I remember, it was hard fought, lots of testimony, people who aren't even here anymore.
Yeah, so. I know. Okay, so Hillary, do you have anything to suggest around what I was talking about, 3A language?
I'll read what BDS wrote for the commissioners. BDS, this is about demolition review procedure. BDS staff has substantial concerns with the language that would allow proposals subject to demolition review to be approved through historic resource review if they meet certain exemptions, which encompass everything other than total demolition, but could alter a historic resource so substantially that it could lose its integrity and or significance. This creates a situation that invites discretion into which type of review must be applied to a proposal. Historic resource review assumes that the essential integrity of a historic resource will be retained by allowing alterations so extensive that they amount to a demolition to only be subject to historic resource review, many of these proposals are likely to be denied. However, if appropriate demolition review criteria are applied, there can be a path to approval for such extensive alterations. Therefore, rather than exempting such proposals from demolition review, BDS suggests that the proposal should be subject to both the applicable historic resource review criteria and the applicable demolition review criteria so that the impacts to the historic resource can be fully considered. I think the essential point of that is to ensure that demolition review approval criteria are applied to those substantial alterations.
And I think that's really all that we need to put, you know, that was a pretty long piece that I wouldn't want to see added to our already lengthy letter. But just a sentence about, the demolition criteria should be applied to those projects that, you know, are going through alterations so severe that it qualifies as a demolition. Does anybody have any comments about that?
I think as a policy matter, I think it, and we haven't workshopped this with BDS yet and certainly want to find a path that works for BDS. As a policy matter, I think a consideration that we'll work through in this discussion is, does it make sense for a proposal that's removing two interior walls to ask the applicant to review all the goals and policies of the comprehensive plan and demonstrate why removal of those walls that are not visible from the street better meet the comp plan goals and policies? Like, is that a, are there scenarios where we don't need to expect that of an applicant? I haven't workshopped it through with BDS, and I think where we're at is we just want to make it work as efficiently as possible for BDS and for the applicant.
Yeah.
Without bothering a decision maker like City Council for a proposal that is the right thing to do with the building.
I understand that.
But I don't think BPS doesn't, I mean, I think we're not wedded to this answer. It's really just trying to look for efficiencies.
Okay.
Brandon, can I ask you a quick question? You were asked a question about your staff time and the amount of resources that go into historic preservation programming. And I'm just curious because, you know, all the stuff that stays on our plate, isn't that going through and those folks have to pay their way basically through permit fees and all that? Whereas if these things start going through the Planning and Sustainability Commission, does that take more of your time in terms of managing historic properties? I mean, I guess I'm just trying to figure out how to answer that question of whether it's worth your time or whether you're spending too much time on historic preservation, because that's often a critique of, you know, wealthy people who can pay the fees can get what they want done. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a good question. My one FTE program area is general fund funded. So my work is funded by the city's general fund and not from permit fees. I've had predecessors in this role before, Liza Mickle, Nicholas Theron, going way back. And I think when the city of Portland relied on National Register listing to automatically convey historic and landmark designation, it put us into a path of complacency on proactive, long-range preservation planning, where Seattle, San Francisco, LA, Boise, other cities in the region who didn't automatically just let the National Register drive all preservation decision-making have staffs in their long-range planning program working on preservation that are more than one FTE. I mean, you look at San Francisco or LA, they've got a whole team who are doing long-range preservation planning, doing surveying, district design guidelines, zoning refinements. And I think it's because they've long had a culture of this city council and their landmarks commission playing a more proactive role. And I think that we were savvy and cheap and relied on the National Register to be our way to update the historic resource inventory for a long time. And we no longer can, there's still a connection there, but I think that we're entering into a new period where there needs to be more deliberate and intentional work. And that work looks like HRI updates, design guidelines, looking at new preservation programs for legacy businesses, cultural districts, micro conservation districts and ensembles, all this stuff you've talked about. But we no longer can just let the National Register do all the work for our future preservation planning efforts. And I think we've seen that rub the last couple of years as this commission has played a much larger role in preservation advocacy in City Hall than your previous commissions had the last 15 years or so.
Well, it just seems like because we've done so little for so long that now it looks like we're, you know, needing more resources suddenly, but in actuality, it's, we've underfunded all this work for a long time. And anyway, it worries me that underneath whatever changes get made, if you don't fund the work to go out and do all the things you were just talking about, or if you're so stretched so thin, or if other priorities are, you know, more important, we won't actually make any progress on, you know, identifying even significant resources.
And I'll say I feel thankful every day I have my job, but just keeping the lights on, having no project, no HRCP, no design guideline project is a one full-time staff role. So right. For us to just keep the lights on, liaise with other city agencies, make sure that the map is updated, that's one staff person. And that's why for the last 20 years, there's been one staff person at BPS doing preservation work, because we're keeping the lights on. Moving the needle takes more than that.
Yeah.
And I think the same, I'm looking at Hillary here too, you know, and I'll do like, I don't know how to say this, like recognizing I bump up against capacity challenges every day. Hillary's also in a similar position of, you know, that really making sure this commission has the support and the staff that you are owed as volunteers, and reviewing land use applications. It's a lot to try to do both. And in many cities, there's one or two staff people who are just the staff to the commission.
Well, Hillary Adam, you do a fantastic job. I will be the first to say you are amazing at what you do. So you never cease to impress me. Thank you. Thank you for preparing us so well. So.
Okay, before we leave the letter, I think I want to sort of put eyeballs on one last couple of sentences. And unfortunately, Commissioner Mahoney has left. She added these, and I think, you know, I think I'm getting the idea, but there, you know, Hillary did sort of have a question mark of like, is this really, you know, how it should read? So I am looking at, let's see, where is this? It's right before proposal 3D. So there's a little section of text that says, per proposal 2B, the PSC would be the advising body to City Council on the creation of historic districts. And there is no guarantee that the PSC will take PHLC's recommendations into account. It puts the PHLC and frankly the PSC in a difficult position if the PHLC applies approval criteria to resources to which they had no say in the creation. Further, it is not PSC's job to apply approval criteria. So I guess I just wanted anybody's thoughts on better wording there.
Yeah, I flagged this just because of this, primarily the statement, there's no guarantee that PSC will take your recommendation into account. While that's technically true, I want, you know, foster the world you want to live in. I want to assume good intentions from everyone. So
that's a good point.
I think that there could be a more...
Right.
Encouraging way to say what you want to say.
Right. Anybody have any ideas on
how about just How about just per proposal 2B, the PSC would be the advising body to City Council on the creation of historic districts, period. The Portland Historic Landmarks Commission feels strongly that these responsibilities are better suited in our commission's duties, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Don't even get into whether they, you know, take our recommendation, not just say that we should be the one.
I think, yeah, once to yeah.
Okay.
I mean, is that the point that's trying to be made?
I think well, so.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. So,
mm-hmm.
per proposal 2B, the PSC would be the advising body to City Council on the creation of historic districts, period. The Portland Historic Landmarks Commission feels strongly that these responsibilities or duties are more suited for our commission's work, or something like that.
Yeah.
Then we don't offend.
Right. Yeah.
Even if we don't intend to.
And I think it's just, it's a more direct, it's making a more direct point.
I agree.
As you draft this piece, since this is coming up to be maybe the hottest item of testimony that's been submitted. One thing I would just remind the commission to think about is the opportunities of working with PSC when new conservation or historic districts are proposed. And you, this will get figured out somehow. I don't exactly know how yet, but PSC and their recommending powers can recommend zoning, height limits, plan districts, design standards. And so there will be, when there's future conversations about creating districts, places where the PSC can play a role that you're not given in the code about how the overlay of historic resource protections interface with other land use decisions. And I can envision a scenario where there may be a proposed conservation district that with the protections that apply to a conservation district, maybe we could see the zoning increase to be something more dense because the protections might allow for a greater intensity of development that would, you know, still protect the resources. So just remembering too that whenever a district is created may also be the right time to right zone the area, and PSC plays that zoning role.
Well, could it be stated as a joint responsibility where each body plays the role that it's intended to play? And, you know, I mean, they in essence are going to have to take on more historic preservation minded people, or I don't know that they're really in a position to make determinations on whether districts should be created or not in some regard. I mean, I don't know. That's it seems like a very narrow expertise compared to the types of qualifications that they have.
If it's something needed by us, but then like you said, joint decision or something like that, something in between. So it's needed by this commission, but in a joint effort, something along those lines.
Or accompanied with a planning analysis.
Yeah.
Right.
With the support of your commission, something, I don't know.
I mean, I do take the point that they have, you know, they have a position to take in terms of how these historic districts are, you know, interweaving with their overall long-term planning goals. And so I would not suggest that they don't have any role to weigh that decision. And I take Brandon's point too about just they're the ones who have to change sometimes the zoning code to make conditions on the ground reflect the goals for the district, if it is one. But I wish there was a way to do it where we had more than just a recommending role.
So what if the sentence really just said, you know, as you said, we would end the per proposal 2B, the PSC would be the advising body to City Council on the creation of historic districts, period. The PHLC feels strongly that these duties are better suited to our commission, but accompanied by a planning and zoning analysis, and even moving certain historic districts to a higher level of density if appropriate.
I could live with that.
Yeah.
Because it sort of gets to that idea that, you know, if we're doing the analysis, much like, you know, Brandon had pointed out, was done, you know, in Alphabet and in Kings Hill in the BHBD project.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I think that's really all I have. Hillary, did I skip over anything that you were sort of questioning?
I don't think so.
And is everybody okay that, you know, there will be a little tiny bit of wordsmithing that will happen, you know, offline here, just because, you know, like Hillary suggested, we're moving in an executive summary here, and we've added in a few sentences, we've taken out a few things, so you won't necessarily see the letter that you're voting on right now, but I think it's really close. Does that seem okay, Hillary?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. I do want to express my appreciation for those of you who have taken on this heavy lift. I think I've probably said it before, when it comes to the policy and the code stuff, it's dizzying for me. I don't feel like I'm really at the forefront of this. Hopefully my contribution with design review and determinations of eligibility and things of that sort offset my complete lack of being able to wrap my head around this stuff, because I get underwater with it really quickly. So I appreciate the level of effort, and I'm okay with, I think it's a good letter to begin with. So if we're talking about small scale tweaks to it and the addition of an executive summary, then I'm totally fine.
Okay.
Thanks. I have to say, Commissioner Smith, having worked on this for many, many hours and polling 60s on average the last 10 or 11 weeks, some of it's above my head too.
Getting paid for 30?
40, 40. Don't tell my hires up. I think this is where I've seen a lot of feedback already from the public of things that we missed as staff or areas where we introduced ambiguities that need to be cleaned up. So there's going to be a long list of cleanup that in our long days, and even items that we went over time and time again, where we didn't see it clearly or didn't interpret it in all the ways it could be interpreted. I'm thinking specifically about the phrase affordable housing found in the demolition review approval criteria for national register districts. Staff had intended that to be capital A, capital H, affordable housing, and the interpretation has been housing that's less expensive. And that was our bat, and we needed to be more clear about it. And so even those of us who have been steep in this are still learning.
You know, Brandon, no one else could have pulled off, you know, single-handedly, you know, a code project this big. I find it amazing that you were able to get something so cohesive on the table. You know, this is amazing.
I have had the thought the last couple of months looking over at my counterpart, Miss Adam, about, you know, what if I just decided to go on a little bit of a sabbatical and let Hillary carry this thing through?
I'm employed by BDS.
how would you say our comments are reflected by what you're hearing from other folks from the preservation community? I mean, are we? I've heard people excited and people not so excited, and I'm just curious. As I weigh what we have, you know, are we better off if it goes through, or are we better off if it doesn't go through? And, you know, the totality of the changes you kind of have to weigh all the good and the bad. There's a lot of really good stuff in there for individual resources and protections and the getting the HRI up and running again. But anyway, I'm just curious if you've had much public comment come in or whether you're even able to comment on it. So.
I think your commission has got a lot of attention, not about these code proposals, but about the role of the commission after these code proposals. And I've been pretty interested in how much feedback we've received towards the membership of the commission, feedback about the size of the commission, the roles, responsibilities of the commission. There's been a lot of interest in it. So I'm interested and eager to see where that discussion goes. And while most of it, I think, has been thinking about district designation, changes to districts, district removal, boundary change, I think there is a lot of eyes on the role this commission plays after these amendments are adopted. And I think that is a variety of perspectives. And I think that has been a surprise to me is how much interest there's been in what's the role of the Landmarks Commission after code changes. And not just from a regulatory perspective, but what role does the commission play in having tough discussions about where do areas of the city that are designated give back more? What does that look like? How do you identify and prioritize resources? So I think, there's a lot of interesting feedback about that. I think the biggest feedback we're receiving has to do with demolition review in National Register districts, the creation and removal of districts, and the roles of the different review bodies to make recommendation to council. Very little feedback on the HRI updates, very little feedback on FAR transfers, or very little feedback on the exemptions, and nervousness about the use incentives. But I think that, you know, some of this is going to be Bright's responsibilities and having to find that balance. But there is some nervousness about the use incentives.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Matthew,
do you need a motion to accept the letter, or I'm happy to make a motion if you want a motion.
Let's wrap it up. Yeah.
With the minor revisions that we've discussed, I would make a motion to accept the letter and forward it on to the Planning and Sustainability Commission in advance of the hearing tomorrow.
Okay.
Second.
Commissioner Roman?
Aye.
Commissioner Smith?
Aye.
Commissioner Funmayer?
Aye.
Commissioner Minor?
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks. I do want to wrap this up, but does anybody have any lingering questions about testimony tomorrow?
I signed up and I got an email, so presumably they'll know that where I fit in the whole thing once they figure out who I am, I guess. Or I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Commissioner Funmayer.
No, I was going to say that I also signed up and I put in there the Landmark Commission as a whatever, I don't know,
Bonnie.
Something. Yeah, they ask you something and I put Landmark Commission in there and I put a sign to the Historic Resources Code Review. So I don't know, I got the email, but I haven't had anything else, I don't know.
Okay. So Brandon, I think we're depending on you to get the first three of us slotted in order, right? And then, and Hillary, you're going to be working with Maya and do CC me as well, because I have a few ideas about testimony, but I just, you know, I want to hear sort of where.
Yeah.
Because it feels like that's a little extra piece that we could add on, right? So.
And then you're going to email me, Kristen, about that.
Yep.
To say thank you.
Yep. We'll be coordinating testimony for the three of us for sure.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
You're all in order. You're up first tomorrow. It should be really good. And like I mentioned earlier, I have talked to some of your counterparts in PSC who will be excited to hear what you have to say. So you do have a receptive audience, and we're we're carving you up first. We are at about 100 people signed up to testify, so it is looking more like the hearing will probably be continued into November for the people who might not get a chance to go tomorrow night. The three of you, you're up first. You'll be on right at 6 o'clock.
Okay. Well, I hope Maya gets in there, you know, before they end the hearing. But in some ways, that's good news, you know, if they're going to extend the hearing to another day. But we'll see. Okay, I think we can probably on that adjourn the hearing. Thanks so much, everyone.
I'm happy to adjourn now, but let's not forget to talk about our friend Commissioner Spears. And I know I got an email from Hillary, just in terms of, you know, I think a reach out and a wrap up warm something. But also, as I was thinking about, you know, how obtuse you can be sometimes, we held a hearing on Indigenous Peoples Day, and I wonder if banks took the day off, but we held a hearing on that day, and I don't know, is that disrespectful to take off? I was just curious about that. We changed Christopher Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day, and then we all didn't really acknowledge it. And so, anyway, just part of my own trying to grow up a little bit and thinking about these things a little differently. I think it's related to what the work that Commissioner Spears was describing and how hard life can be sometimes. So it's anyway, I just don't want us to not wrap up, because I did watch that, and I know Commissioner Smith watched it as well, and it was some, you know, emotional, powerful. He was telling us a lot in that little bit there. So anyway, maybe next time when we have more of the whole commission, we could send him a virtual card or something, or a box of chocolates, something that just says, "Hey, we're still thinking about you." So.
But I don't think going to adjourn and talk about this after we adjourn.
Okay, sorry. Thank you guys for your time.
Just stay there. Just don't leave and just wait for the meeting.
Hold on. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to go though. Bye, guys.